This is the Roaring Oven podcast, and it's an important time of the year because school is starting again for me, but we're still making time to go through our little journey in the Debir report. And obviously I can't do this on my lonesome. I need my steady guide, Dave.
Hello, hello, hello. Yes, indeed. We continue to dive into the slightly scary world of incidents and breaches and all sorts of other things going on.
Yes, and what's going on?
Well, we're currently on figures 43 and 44, which are on page 39. And it's talking about the patterns over time for both incidents and breaches. So in terms of incidents, the number one incident pretty much through the entire history of the report from 2020 all the way through to 2020, well, nearly 2025, more on that in a minute, has been denial of service. That's, you know, hovers around about maybe 35 to 50, nearly 50% of all incidents are denial of service attacks. But just from 2024 to 2025, that sort of really ramped down, and basically the second highest category really ramped up, which was system intrusions, which it seems to be, I'm guessing that in this case, yeah, it does seem to be, in this case, so incidents are, 22,052 incidents just in 2025 alone that make up this report, and obviously there may be more incidents that didn't get reported in such a way that they were captured in this. But it's interesting to see these two things cross over, and you can see that, you know, breaches are obviously a subset of incidents. Nearly half of the things that are captured here are breaches. So about 12,195 incidents in 2025. And for that, system intrusion has been the predominant sort of route since 2022 or thereabouts. And that had a particular spike between 2024 and 2025. So that, you know, does make sense as to why that crossed over between denial of service attacks. But, you know, a lot of the other things that we sort of think of with incidents and breaches, so privilege misuse, social engineering, web application attacks, lost and stolen assets, you know, all of those things, like, they're relatively low in terms of, you know, they're closer to somewhere between 5 to 10%. So, like, denial of service and system intrusion are massive in terms of overall incidents, which is sort of, I suppose, good, if you can call those things good. But the difference between incidents and breaches, and again, I think this is a good thing for the most part, is that social engineering sort of being the cause of a breach has actually sort of dropped since 2021, and is now hovering at, I don't know, around about 20%, whereas it peaked at around 30-35%, something like that. So I guess, you know, some of this training and some of the common sense that we're sort of trying to tell people to pay attention from is maybe sinking in?
Well, yes and no. I mean, first off, denial of service not being in the breaches report is normal, of course, because denial of service doesn't breach, it just denies service. Yeah. It's also a very easy thing to do. That's why it's very high up in there. And I'm wondering if the drop in the last six months before the 2025, since 2024, is because we're better at detecting and mitigating those things, because things like Cloudflare and content management, we have tooling in place these days A lot of DDoS attacks happen into very creative spaces. Think of gaming and things like that. So there are a lot of people actually working on this. So maybe that's one reason to went down. But maybe it's just something we already mentioned earlier. The main motivation is money, money, money.
Yeah.
And a system intrusion allows you to capture stuff that you can sell afterwards, while denial of service only gives you kind of a passive monetary gain by, if I can make sure my competition isn't reachable, people will have to use my stuff, so I will sell more. But that's more of a way complicated correlation to make there.
And I mean, there's also people kind of holding organizations to ransom, like we will carry on making your service crappy and or unavailable unless you pay us money.
But that's what I mean. We have a lot of tools now to fix that. In the past, yes, I mean, there's a famous Sony network from, God, that's 20 years ago now, I think, where Sony was offline for like 3 months or something, the Sony network, because look it up on the internet. It's an interesting story behind that. But that was really hard when they got denial of service. They didn't have these Cloudflare kind of services to quickly bounce to different IP addresses, have DNS updated this quickly. So it was very hard to fix. Well, these days, if a DDoS attack starts, yes, it will have an effect for typically half a day-ish. And then things are put in place to kind of mitigate them. So even if you want to do it for a ransomware kind of attack, I think it's getting less and less effective these days.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense.
The other thing I saw here, which social engineering, which makes me, again, the pessimist in the story. And this is how the 10-year story, right? Dave the optimist, Jon the realist. Because if you look at the incidents, social engineering is like in the 10% range. But of the breaches, it's in the 20 to 40% range, now dropping lately to the 20% again. So while the social engineering is kind of low in incidence, which for me translate to there's not that many attempts at social engineering compared to denial of service and system intrusion, they are very successful. A lot of them actually develop into real breaches. Kind of also makes sense because social engineering means you're getting in, you're going through it, you're adding more and more onto it. So it's a traversal point. It's one of the, in my opinion, the most active intrusion attempts you can do, because you have to go from A to B to C to D, getting more and more information. So it's an active thing. So you basically will only start doing that when you really want to get in. While a DDoS attack, if you take the old style approach for a ransomware, well, just DDoS everything you can find and see which ones fall, and then you can do something with that. So sad that social engineering is apparently very effective still, but it's kind of normal because the effort put in the incident that leads to breach will have been way more involved, larger, whatever you want to call it, than a privileged use, system intrusion, another service attack.
Yep, makes sense.
And that also means that the privilege misuse, for example, also low incidence, somewhat higher, breaches not that much, lost and stolen assets also not that much. And the errors, also, errors is also a nice one. If you look at the incidents, error miscellaneous errors is very low, but it's going down and then up again, and we're still in the 10% range these days. So
yeah.
Honest mistakes, they do sink ships. Or how did that thing go again?
Loose lips sink ships, indeed.
I know, but that couldn't say here. Although social engineering is loose lips, right?
It is, indeed. Loose lips sink servers. Loose lips sink SaaS.
No, honest mistakes sink servers. We have a new bumper sticker.
Okay. All right, so moving on, I think.
Yes, why not one whole page? Page 40.
Indeed. And I think you had something on this about the way that certain different types of abuses are going down/up. Bit of a roller coaster, this one.
Yes, and I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't understand. I mean, credential abuse, this is a graph, figure 45, page 40. That shows the known initial access vectors over time in ransomware actions. And credential abuse, exploitation of vulnerabilities, and phishing are the three ones in there. And phishing was starting kind of low, and over the years it's creeping up a little bit to the 10% range now. Again, I think this is more the AI tooling making a change here, perhaps. I mean, that's a logical thing happening. Exploitation of vulnerabilities, I understand as well. It starts in a 10% range, then suddenly 2024 has a peak to 30%, and then it drops down again. I can explain that vulnerabilities are found, fixed, and now they're not there anymore. So there will be more attention spent on something that peaks. So people will take mitigating actions, and it'll drop down again. Totally fine. But credential abuse, I mean, it starts at the 40% range in 2021, drops to 20, then moves up to 50, then moves down again to 10. What is happening there?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't understand.
The other thing, and again, I've mentioned it before, but like the Debris Report is very good about, there are numerous sections throughout, and in fact, there's a section right at the end of the report that does talk about the fact that there is an amount of, you know, an amount of bias in this data, in that it is the based on the information that is reported and therefore available. And so I wonder if there's, you know, something to do with that, because if you take out 2022 and like the data point there, It almost could be like a steady downward curve with a bit of an uptick in 2025, which would be, you know, common alongside the phishing uptick. So maybe 2022, just like the data that was reported, there was just a higher percentage of things that had, you know, credential abuse cases in them. I don't know. It feels a bit weird and anomalous.
Yeah, I mean, in my memory, the last couple, it's only this year that they had a kind of a shift because a big US respondent wasn't willing to participate this time. The last couple of years, and the respondents were kind of stable, let's say. And I would also, if that was the case, I would expect big changes in the other two as well in 2022. And those do still follow through.
Yeah.
And I mean, credential abuse is also such an easy one. This is not something that we mentioned earlier that for the denial of service attacks, you now have Cloudflare. So between 10 years ago and today, there should be a drop down because you have these kind of mitigation things in effect. But credential abuse, I mean, 2FA is something that's been around for more than 10 years now, I think. It's getting more use more lately. But in 2022, I don't really remember multi-factor authentication being something dramatically more in use. I don't understand this one. And it's, again, so sad that the beer doesn't give you more analysis, investigation beneath all the numbers, but that's not what they do, whatever. But this is one I really scratch my head. What is happening there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit of a strange one. It's a bit of a strange one.
Listener, if you have an idea, let me know. I always love to learn.
Well, the next one, you know, which I think generally is a good thing, is that overall it seems like the amounts that end up getting paid for ransomware attacks are steadily, well, maybe not steadily, but have dropped over the course from 2022 to 2023 to 2024. Now, it looks to me as if, you know, 2022, the numbers were not at their lowest, but they were lower. There was everything pretty much quite the bottom end, but a lot of the numbers went up in 2023. And then the numbers are, you know, a little bit, well, I guess nearly half to a third in 2024, but it also looks like the bell curve is shifted somewhat. So the lower end of the payments, so going from $300,000 to $115,000, like that amount is, to me, that looks like a fatter part of the curve than certainly the previous year. Whereas the right hand side of, you know, the bell as it descends again looks vaguely similar, but the amounts have dropped from, you know, from 2.2 million in 2023 down to 1 million. And at the high end, you're looking at, you know, it going from, you know, 9.9, nearly $10 million down to about $3.6 million, with a handful of organizations paying, you know, over $10 million for ransomware attacks. But like the overall news, I mean, I don't know that I would say it's good, but at least it's better. Is that the way to put it?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, you're right. The curve got more narrow. I mean, the median is still kind of bad. The median used to be 73,000, then went to 150,000, or 115,000. I'd say that's a calculation error. It's still in the 120,000, 150,000. So that most people that get attacked still get attacked. That hasn't changed at all. But the sides of the curve, I mean, it's definitely not a real nice bell-shaped curve. I mean, if you, please go look at the report itself, but it's very, very jagged. But if you kind of idealize it to a normal bell curve, then you could say that the sides have gotten steeper, which means that the excesses, both on the cheapy and the not cheap side, are less excessive. And that's what Dave mentioned, going from 7 million to 9 million, back to 3 million this year, which means that kind of the whales have decided they won't pay because they have enough money to... I mean, again, it's always a balancing act, right? You can pay for the keys for the ransomware attack, which costs you X, or live with the consequences of not paying, which costs you Y. At some point, if the cost of getting the key is more than what you calculate will be the effect of the ransomware attack if you don't pay for it, why would you pay for it? It doesn't really work out. I mean, I can imagine some companies think a bit like, let's burn down the shed, that way I can get insurance money. I guess you can get into that deal as well. So we see that the excesses have gone down, but the amount of ransomware attacks is only going up, and the median. So if you get ransomware, you will still be paying pretty much the same you were paying in the last years as well. The thing that doesn't say in the text is, does this mean that bigger companies, the trillion-dollar companies, aren't being hit anymore? Or are they still being hit, but just being asked a lower dollar amount? That's a piece of information. I would assume the latter. I don't assume that they stop hacking Microsoft, Apple, Nvidia, and things like that, because they're so huge. The chance of finding a hole is a lot bigger in a big cheese than a small cheese.
Yeah, indeed. Yep.
But these numbers are bonkers. I mean, on one hand, a ransomware attack, and it costs you $130 to get it done.
That's the thing. It's for, you know, on the left hand side of the bell curve, it's a volume game. Like, okay, maybe they only get $100, maybe $1,000, yeah, maybe $10,000, but they could be doing, you know, hundreds of these a week,
But the height of the balls is of the lot is how many of those payments were made. So if the left side is a volume game, it should be a downward sloping curve, a line, actually. It shouldn't be going, because there's a very low amount of people paying it. Okay, you can also say it's a volume game and most people don't pay it, because you will only ask for $100 if you know that what you've gotten isn't worth very much.
Yeah, you know, some home user, yeah, whatever.
I guess.
Yeah.
And there's a little peak on the $1,000 line, which, yeah, that's decent money. And probably also means that if I don't, I can still pay $1,000. It won't die from it. I won't have to skip eating tonight.
Yeah.
And if I have to rebuild all this stuff, it's going to be 2, 3, 4 weeks or months of work. Okay. So that's kind of a cutoff thing, right? The moment you go over $1,000, it drops down again.
Yep.
Psychological barrier, probably. It's not $1,000. No, it's $999.99. That's way cheaper.
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed.
Oh, fun to look at colored dots.
Indeed. So let's do one more quick one. And let's finish on a fun one. Well, fun in air quotes. You know, the world of spies, of James Bond, of Mission Impossible. You know, surprisingly enough, most breaches are not like parachuting through the ceiling of a building, suspended in midair, you know, hacking through a thing and then being winched back up. Actually, 100% of espionage motivated breaches use just other network services to, you know, gain further access. So think about that as being your Samba service or Windows file sharing and other things like that. This crazy amount is, well, I suppose it's not that crazy that 100% of espionage motivated right? breaches use network services to
you don't go physically to the location.
Yeah.
If air gapped, this wouldn't work. So that's kind of weird.
Well, that's not quite true. You know, once you've got access to something, you can then, even if it's air gapped, you can still use other services to get around.
Well, no, that's the whole idea of air gap, that there is no network connection between the inside
yes,
and the
but,
outside.
Yes, but there are still network services within the air gapped environment. There you go.
Okay. So any kind of lateral movement.
Yeah.
And networks. Okay.
And technically, you know, air gapped environments. So, you know, there have been breaches into air-gapped environments where people have used KVMs. Now, the KVMs themselves are on, you know, a different network to all of the rest of the infrastructure. So, technically, quote-unquote, the environment is still air-gapped, but it is still manageable via something else, which is a terrible practice. Yes. I have seen it done. I have seen it exploited. It's very, very bad. Anyway, so, you know, other networks are used, you know, in 100% apparently of the, at least of the breaches, espionage motivated breaches recorded. Backdoors at 61%. It's the backdoors again.
That's a lot of them out there.
But this is state sponsored. Mm-hmm. Espionage. It doesn't say state sponsored. It just says espionage. So this could be corporate espionage as well. You know, use of. I think this to me makes sense because typically, when we're talking about espionage, we're talking about, frankly, like this is higher stakes stuff. This is at a, let's say, a professional, like a serious professional level. You know, backdoors that, you know, folks in three-letter agencies in the US, for example, know exist are often not known by your average script kiddie, that sort of thing. So it doesn't surprise me that there's a lot more backdoor-based espionage than, you know, other methods. But it's kind of crazy that, you know, just exploiting things through a web application, which has been the highest sort of percentage of things in so many other incidents and things like that, you know, it's the fourth highest, all the way down at 28% in this, which is, yeah, kind of just flips the script a bit.
They did pass over the Hollywood hackers, the command shell. I mean, any hacker movie on TV, just the guy typing furiously on a command shell window somewhere.
Yep.
That's obviously how you do it. And apparently 56%.
Yeah. And then, you know, slightly scary is that 24% of folks, you know, they just got the VPN credentials, so they just, you know, get straight on in.
Well, there are a couple of malicious VPN vendors out there as well, right? I mean, when you select a I use VPN myself for certain things. You have to do your due diligence on selecting a good VPN partner. Mm. And, of course, those companies can also get hacked. So it's not because you have a VPN that now you're safe. And especially for the people in Britain these days, I mean, it's been a couple of months now, but VPN use is probably still going through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, VPNs, it's makes you feel secure, which is always a bad thing.
Yeah, can be. Mm. Well, in that case, unless there's anything else from you.
Nope. this spy is signing off.
In that case, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon, and every contribution really does help. Please, by all means, go to the roaringelephant.org website for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is James Bond.
And my name is 00Pi.
Oh dear. And we look forward to talking to you next week. Is it cherry pie or apple pie or?
No, triangle pie. my code number never ends. Oh, when the bad guy tries to kill me, and they always say, you know, Mr. 007, what am I going to do now? Well, they can't stop saying my name. This spy isn't an ending number, so I live forever.
Right.
I've thought about this.
Right. Okay. Well, see you then. Bye.